Cassette number 24, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 996. 3. 15 Rules for Magic. These rules will necessarily be of an esoteric nature, and the student will need to remember that the terminology is in the nature of a blind, which ever carried revelation to those who have the clue, but tends to perplex and to bewilder the student who, as yet, is unready for the truth. Page 997. I would also remind the student to bear in mind that all that is here imparted concerns white magic and is given from the standpoint of the solar angel and of solar fire. Bearing these two points in mind, the student will find much in these rules to produce eventual internal illumination. We will divide them into three groups of aphorisms or occult phrases. Of these, the first will concern itself with the work of the magician on the mental plane, with his manipulation of solar energy and his ability to sweep the builders into cooperation with his purposes. The second group will carry the work on down to the plane of desire and of vitalization, and will convey information as to the balancing of the pairs of opposites and their equilibrizing so that eventual manifestation becomes possible. The third group of rules will deal with the physical plane, with the transmission of force, A, through the centers, B, through the brain, C, through the physical plane itself. A. 6 rules for the mental plane. Certain of the laws of speech will be given, and the significance of color and or sound will appear beneath the exoteric form of the phrasing to those whose perception suffices. Rule 1. The solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep communicates with his reflection. The significance of this rule is easily to be seen. The white magician is ever one who, through conscious alignment with his ego, with his angel, is receptive to his plans and purposes, and therefore capable of receiving the higher impression. We must remember that white magic works from above downwards and is the result of solar vibration, and not of the heating impulses emanating from one or other of the lunar petries. The downflow of the impressing energy from the solar petri is the result of his internal recollectedness, his indrawing of his forces prior to sending them out concentratedly to his shadow man, and his steady meditation upon the purpose and the plan. Page 998. It may be of use to the student if he here remembers that the ego, as well as the logos, is in deep meditation during the whole cycle of physical incarnation. This solar meditation is cyclic in nature, the petri involved sending out to his reflection rhythmic streams of energy, which streams are recognized by the man concerned as his higher impulses, his dreams, and aspirations. Therefore, it will be apparent why workers in white magic are ever advanced and spiritual men, for the reflection is seldom responsive to the ego or the solar angel until many cycles of incarnation have transpired. The solar petri communicates with his shadow or reflection by means of the sutratma, which passes down through the bodies to a point of entrance in the physical brain. Rule 2. When the shadow hath responded, in meditation deep the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. Here the work of the two, the ego on its own plane and its instrument in the three worlds, is shown as linked and coordinated. As we well know, the main function of meditation is to bring the lower instrument into such a condition of receptivity and vibratory response that the ego, or solar angel, can use it and produce specific results. This involves, therefore, a downflow of force from the upper levels of the mental plane, the habitat of the real man, and a reciprocal vibration emanating from man, the reflection. Page 999. When these two vibrations are attuned and the interplay is rhythmic, then the two meditations proceed synchronously, and the work of magic and of creation can proceed unimpeded. It will therefore be apparent that the brain is the physical correspondence to the force centers upon the mental plane, and that the vibration has to be consciously set up by the man when meditating. When this is effected, the man can be a conscious creator, and the work proceeds, therefore, in a triple manner. The force circulates freely via three points of centralized activity. First, from that circle of petals in the egoic lotus which the ego chooses to use or is in a position to use. This is conditioned by the objective in view and the state of egoic unfoldment. Secondly, the center in the physical brain which is active in meditation. This is also conditioned by the man's point of evolution and the particular goal in mind. Thirdly, the center of force generated by the man upon the lower mental plane as he proceeds to form the necessitated thought form and to sweep into activity those builders who can respond to the vibration sent forth. This is likewise conditioned by the strength of his meditation, the fullness of the note sent forth by him, and the strength of his initiated vibration. Hence, the first thing the solar angel does is to form a triangle consisting of himself, the man on the physical plane, and the tiny point of force which is the result of their united endeavor. It will be of value to students of meditation to ponder upon this procedure and to study the correspondence between it and the work of the solar logos as he created the heavens and the earth. Page 1000. The highest and the lowest aspects met, spirit and matter were brought into contact with each other. The consequence of this interplay was the birth of the sun, or the great solar thought form. In the three worlds, man, the lesser deity, within his limits, proceeds along analogous lines. The three who are illumined by the light of the One are the three persons of the lower triad, the mental body, the astral body, and the physical body. They, with the illuminator, make the four referred to, and thus becomes apparent the microcosmic tetractys. The two rules above form the esoteric basis of all meditation and need to be carefully studied if results are to be achieved. Rule 3. The energy circulates. The point of light, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather round its glowing warmth until its light recedes. Its fire grows dim. Then shall the second sound go forth. The white magician, having, through meditation and conscious purpose, formed a focal point of energy upon the mental plane, increases the vibration through strenuous concentration. He begins then to visualize in detail the form he is seeking to build. He pictures it with all its component parts and sees before his mind's eye the consummated product of the egoic meditation as he has succeeded in bringing it through. This produces what is here called the secondary note, the first being the note emanating from the ego on its own plane, which awakened the reflection and called forth response. The vibration becomes stronger, and the note sounded by the man on the physical plane ascends and is heard upon the mental plane. Hence, in all meditation that is of occult value, the man has to do certain things in order to aid in bringing about the results. Page 1001. He tranquilizes his bodies in order that there be no impediment to the egoic intent, and listens for the voice of the silence. He responds then to that voice consciously, and broods over the imparted plans. He then sounds the sacred word, taking up the note of the ego as he believes he hears it, and sending it forth to swell the egoic sound and to set in motion matter on the mental plane. He, synchronously with this sounding, visualizes the proposed thought form, which is to embody egoic purposes, and pictures it in detail. We must not forget that we are here dealing with those conscious meditations based on knowledge and long experience which produce magical results on the physical plane. We are not dealing here with those meditations which have for their purpose the revelation of the inner God and the bringing in of the illuminating fire of the ego. When this process is proceeding under rule and order, the focal point of energy on the lower mental plane gains in strength. Its light or fire makes itself felt. It becomes, in the occult sense, visually objective and attracts the attention of the lesser builders through A, its radiation or warmth, B, its active vibration, C, its sound or note, D, its light. The elemental workers of responsive capacity are gathered and swept into the radius of the force and begin to gather around. The intended form begins to be apparent, and tiny life after tiny life takes its place in its construction. The result of this coherency is that the inner light becomes veiled, its brilliancy dimmed, just as the inner light of the ego in its shadow or thought form, man, is similarly dimmed and hidden. Page 1002. Rule 4. Sound, light, vibration, and the form blend and merge, and thus the work is one. It proceedeth under the law, and naught can hinder now the work from going forward. The man breathes deeply. He concentrates his forces and drives the thought form from him. Here we have a very important piece of work of magic dealt with, and one that is little considered and known. The force used by the ego in the work of forcing the man to carry out his purpose has been dynamic will, and the petal, or energy center, employed has been one of the will petals. The man has, up till now, been driven by egoic will, but has blended with this much of the energy of the attraction aspect, desire or love, thereby gathering to himself on the mental plane the material needed for his thought form. He has succeeded so far that on the concrete levels of the mental plane is to be seen a form in mental matter which is coherent, alive, vibrant, and of a desired nature. Its internal activity is such that its persistence for the length of time necessary to ensure achievement of the egoic purpose is assured. It stands ready to be sent forth upon its mission, to gather to itself material of a denser nature upon the astral plane, and to achieve greater consolidation. This is brought about by an act of will emanating from the man, and he gives the living form power to break loose. It is exactly at this point, fortunately for the human race, that the majority of magical investigators fail in their work. They build a form in mental matter, but do not know how to send it forth, so that inevitably it will fulfill its mission. Thus, many thought forms die a natural death on the mental plane, owing to the inability of the man to exert the will faculty constructively, and his failure to understand the laws of thought form construction. Another factor is his lack of knowledge of the formula which releases the elemental builders from their surroundings and forces them to cohere within the periphery of the thought form for as long as the thinker desires. Page 1003. Finally, they die owing to the incapacity of the man, which prevents him holding a meditation long enough and formulating his ideas clearly enough to bring about ultimate materialization. Men are as yet too impure and too selfish to be trusted with this knowledge. Their thought forms would be constructed in order to be sent on selfish missions and for destructive ends. And until they are more spiritual and have gained control over their lower nature, the magical words which galvanize into separated activity the form in mental substance will not be available for their use. It might be asked how it is that men do achieve their ends through concentration and visualization and do manage to send forth the thought forms which reach their objective. In two ways this can be brought about. First, by an unconscious recollection of methods and formulas known and used in Atlantean days, when the magical formulas were public property and men produced results through the pronouncement of certain sounds. They did not achieve their ends through mental ability, but principally through a parrot-like capacity to repeat mantrams. These are, at times, hidden in the subconscious nature and are used unwittingly by the man who is feeling strongly enough. Second, through the thoughts and ideas of the man fitting in with the plans and purposes of those who do know, either on the path of white or black magic, then they utilize the form with its inherent force and galvanize it into activity and a temporary separate identity, thus sending it forth to accomplish his purpose. This accounts for many of the apparently phenomenal results achieved by selfish or by incompetent, though good, thinkers. Page 1004. The magical words are only communicated under the seal of secrecy to men working under the Brotherhood of Light, to initiates and to pledged chelas, owing to the great danger involved. Occasionally, too, they are ascertained by men and women who have brought about a condition of alignment with the ego and are therefore in touch with the inner center of all knowledge within themselves. When this is so, the knowledge is safe, for the ego ever works on the side of law and righteousness, and the words being emanated by the ego are lost in his sound, as it is occultly termed, and will not be remembered by the physical brain when not under the influence of the solar angel. The six rules for the mental plane are necessarily brief, owing to the fact that the plane of mind is as yet an unknown land to the majority, unknown insofar as its conscious control is concerned. These two remaining rules concern, in the first case, the brother engaged in white magic, and in the second, the thought form he is constructing. Rule 5. Three things engage the solar angel before the sheath created passes downward: the condition of the waters, the safety of the one who thus creates, and steady contemplation. Thus are the heart, the throat, and the eye allied for triple service. The focal point of energy that the man, the magician, has now created upon the mental plane has reached a vibratory activity which makes it certain that response will be called forth from the matter required for the providing of the next and denser sheath. This vibration will result in an aggregation of a different type of divine life substance around the central nucleus. The form, occultly, is made to be sent forth, to descend, to fly as a bird forth upon its mission, and a critical moment is near for the magician. Page 1005. One of the things the magician has to see to is that this form which he has constructed, and which he holds linked to him by a fine thread of animated substance, a correspondence on a minute scale of the sutratmic thread, whereby the monad or the ego holds in connection its form of manifestation, shall neither die for lack of vital sustenance nor return to him with its mission unfulfilled. When this latter catastrophe is the case, the thought form becomes a menace to the magician, and he becomes the prey of that which he has created. The devas, who form the body of the idea which has failed in its purpose, form a drain upon his vital force. He therefore sees to it that the motive or desire lying back of the idea, now clothed with its first sheath, retains its pristine purity, that no trace of selfish intent, no perversion of the initial purpose of the solar angel has been permitted to bring in an unworthy vibration. This is what is meant by attending to the condition of the waters. As we well know, water stands for matter, and the substances of the astral plane which are now under consideration are of prime importance in all form building. According to the substance used and the nature of the builders who respond to the note of the form in mental matter, will the purpose be accomplished. This is the most important stage in many ways, for the astral body of any form conditions A, the nature of the physical vehicle, B, the transmission of force from the next highest plane. Provided the man on the physical plane can hold the purpose steady and refuse to permit its distortion by the influences and vibrations emanating from the lower man, then the devas of karma can carry on their work. Page 1006. I would remind students at this juncture that any thought form necessarily finds its way into greater streams of force or energy emanating from advanced thinkers of every grade, from the planetary logos downward, and according to its nature and motive, so the work of evolution is assisted or retarded. It is in this connection that the Nirmanakaya's work, manipulating streams of thought energy, vitalizing the forms created by men, and thus carrying on the work of construction or destruction. They have to use that which exists, hence the necessity for clear thinking. Having purified the waters or safeguarded his desires, the thinker next proceeds, through the use of certain words which are imparted to him by the solar angel, to protect himself from the devas of elemental nature with which he is purposing to work. On the mental plane, the nature and vibration of the solar angel proved sufficient protection, but he is now proposing to work with the most dangerous elementals and existences in the three worlds. Footnote: HPB has said that the elementals of the air are the most wicked and dangerous. He refers there to the physical plane and to dangers menacing the physical body. They are the most dangerous where the physical plane is concerned. But in the case we are considering, we are dealing with man, the unity in the three worlds. Return to text. These protective formulas are sounded forth by the thinker in conjunction with the solar angel at the moment the thought form is ready to receive its astral sheath. The mantram deals with the forces which impel activity in the Agnishurians and starts a stream of protective energy from one of the heart petals of the egoic lotus. This circulates through the throat center of the man and sets up a circulatory stream of energy around him, which automatically repulses the devas who might, through their blind, unintelligent work, menace his peace. These two matters attended to, desire adjusted and the identity guarded, both the solar angel and the worker in magic maintain an attitude of contemplation, or that profound condition which succeeds that called meditation. Page 1007. In contemplation, the inner eye is fixed upon the object of contemplation, and this produces, unconsciously in most cases, a steady stream of energy which is focused upon the objective, producing vitalization and activity. It is the basis of the work of transmutation, for instance, when the human substance is transmuted into solar substance. The ego contemplates his lunar bodies, and gradually the work is accomplished. When his reflection, man, has reached a point in evolution where he can meditate and contemplate, the work is more rapidly accelerated, and transmutation proceeds with rapidity, particularly on the physical plane. In the work of thought form building, the man, in contemplation, pursues the work of energizing and vitalizing. It might here be said that the eye is the great directing agency. When the third eye is used, which is the case in contemplation, it is the synthesizer and director of triple energy, hence the powerful work performed by those in whom it is functioning. The third eye only begins to function when the third circle of egoic petals is beginning slowly to unfold. If students will study the effect of the human eye on the physical plane and then extend the concept to the work of the interior thinker as he utilizes the third eye, they will get an interesting light upon the subject of thought control. The old commentary says, quote, "When the eye is blind, the forms created revolve in circles and fulfill not the law. When the eye is open, force streams forth, direction is assured, fulfillment is certain, and the plans proceed under law. The eye which is blue in color, and the eye which sees not red when open, produce that which is intended with great facility." Close quote. The final rule is contained in the words, Rule 6. The devas of the lower four feel the force when the eye opens. They are driven forth and lose their master. Page 1008. The egoic energy transmitted via the physical brain is directed now to the work of sending forth the form so that it may clothe itself in astral matter. The eye of the thinker opens and repulsing vitality streams forth. More need not be said here, for until the eye is functioning, it is not possible for men to comprehend the nature of the energy which they will then wield or direct. B. 5 rules for the astral plane. Before we take up the consideration of the second set of rules for magic, I would like to make a few remarks anent the eye of the magician, to which reference has been earlier made. One of the fundamental rules back of all magical processes is that no man is a magician or worker in white magic until the third eye is opened or in process of opening, for it is by means of that eye that the thought form is energized, directed, and controlled, and the lesser builders or forces are swept into any particular line of activity. Among the coming discoveries and among the next revelations of materialistic science will be one which will concern itself with the force-directing faculty of the human eye, alone or collectively, and this will indicate one of the first stages towards the rediscovery of the third eye, or the eye of Shiva. Shiva is, as we know, one of the names for the first great logoic aspect, and under that name is hidden much of esoteric moment. Shiva stands for A. the will aspect, B. the spirit aspect, C. the Father in heaven, D. the directing purpose, E. conscious energy, F. dynamic intent. And in the consideration of these phrases, the innate faculties of the third eye will become apparent. Page 1009. The eye of Shiva in the human being has its position, as is already known, in the center of the forehead between the two physical eyes. It is not to be confounded with the pineal gland, which is distinctly a physical center or gland. The third eye exists in etheric matter and is an etheric center of force, being made of the substance of the ethers, whereas the pineal gland is formed of matter of the three lower subplanes of the physical plane. The latter, nevertheless, has to be functioning more or less before the eye of Shiva becomes in any degree active, and it is this fact that has led writers of occult books in the past purposely to confound the two in order to protect the knowledge. The third eye is formed through the activity of three factors. First, through the direct impulse of the ego on its own plane. During the greater part of evolution, the ego makes its contact with its reflection, physical plane man, through the center at the top of the head. When man is more highly evolved and is nearing or treading the path, the indwelling self takes a more complete grasp of its lower vehicle and descends to a point in the head or brain, which is found approximately in the center of the forehead. This is its lowest contact. It is interesting here to note the correspondence with the evolution of the senses. The three major senses, and the three first to demonstrate in order, are hearing, touch, sight. For the greater part of evolution, hearing is the guiding impulse of human life through egoic contact with the top of the head. Later, when the ego descends a little lower, the etheric center, which is active in connection with the pituitary body, is added, and man becomes responsive to subtler and higher vibrations. The occult correspondence to the physical sense of touch awakens. Page 1010. Finally, the third eye opens, and the pineal gland simultaneously begins to function. At first, the sight is dim, and the gland is only partially responsive to vibration. But gradually, the eye opens fully, the gland is fully active, and we have the fully awakened man. When this is the case, the outer major center vibrates, and then the three physical head centers are functioning. Second, through the coordinated activity of the major head center, the many-petaled lotus above the top of the head. This center directly affects the pineal gland, and the interplay of force behind the two, the correspondence on a tiny scale of the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, produces the great organ of consciousness, the eye of Shiva. It is the instrument of wisdom, and in these three centers of energy we have the correspondence of the three aspects within the head of man. 1. Major head center, will aspect, spirit, Father in heaven. 2. Pineal gland, love-wisdom aspect, consciousness, sun. 3. Third eye, activity aspect, matter, mother. The third eye is the director of energy or force, and thus an instrument of the will or spirit. It is responsive only to that will as controlled by the sun aspect, the revealer of the love, wisdom, nature of gods and man, and it is therefore the sign of the white magician. Third, the reflex action of the pineal gland itself. As these three types of energy, or the vibration of these three centers, begin to contact each other, a definite interplay is set up. This triple interplay forms in time a vortex or center of force, which finds its place in the center of the forehead and takes eventually the semblance of an eye looking out between the other two. Page 1011. It is the eye of the inner vision, and he who has opened it can direct and control the energy of matter, see all things in the eternal now, and therefore be in touch with causes more than with effects, read the Akashic records, and see clairvoyantly. Therefore, its possessor can control the builders of low degree. The eye of Shiva, when perfected, is blue in color, and as our solar logos is the blue logos, so do his children occultly resemble him. But this color must be interpreted esoterically. It must be remembered also that prior to the final two initiations, the sixth and seventh, the eye of the white magician, when developed, will be colored according to the man's ray, again esoterically understood. More anent this question of color may not be communicated. According to the color, so will be the type of energy manipulated, but here it must be borne in mind that all magicians work with three types of energy: A, that which is the same as their own ray; B, that which is complementary to their own type of force; C, their polar opposite. And they work, therefore, either along the line of least resistance or through attraction and repulsion. It is through the medium of this all-seeing eye that the adept can at any moment put himself in touch with his disciples anywhere, that he can communicate with his compeers on the planet, on the polar opposite of our planet, and on the third planet, which, with ours, forms a triangle, that he can, through the energy directed from it, control and direct the builders, and hold any thought form he may have created within his sphere of influence and upon its intended path of service, and that through his eye, by means of directed energy currents, he can help and stimulate his disciples or groups of men in any place at any time. Page 1012. The pineal gland is subject to two lines of stimulation. First, that which emanates from the ego itself via the etheric force centers. This downflow of egoic energy, the result of the awakening of the centers through meditation and spirituality of life, impinges upon the gland and in the course of years gradually increases its secretion, enlarges its form, and starts it into a new cycle of activity. The second line of stimulation affecting the pineal gland is that which is the consequence of the discipline of the physical body and its subjugation to the laws of spiritual unfoldment. As the disciple lives a regulated life, avoids meat, nicotine, and alcohol, and practices continence, the pineal gland becomes no longer atrophied, but resumes its earlier activity. More cannot here be given, but enough has been indicated to give the student food for thought. In meditation, by the sounding of the word, the student awakens response in the major head center, causes reciprocal vibration between it and the physical head center, and gradually coordinates the forces in the head. Through the practice of the power of visualization, the third eye is developed. The forms visualized and the ideas and abstractions which are in the process mentally clothed and vehicled are pictured a few inches from the third eye. It is the knowledge of this which causes the Eastern yogi to speak of concentration upon the tip of the nose. Behind this misleading phrase, a great truth is veiled. In proceeding with the rules for magic, we will take up those concerned with the second set, which deal with the form-building impulses and those attractive tendencies which are the basis of physical plane manifestation. We have considered certain rules which deal with the work of the solar angel, who, in all true magical work of any kind, is the active agent. We have considered the rules whereby he constructs a thought form upon the mental plane, or that germ body which will, through accretion and vibratory sound, take to itself other forms. Page 1013. Rule 7. The dual forces on the plane whereon the vital power must be sought are seen. The two paths face the solar angel. The poles vibrate. A choice confronts the one who meditates. Upon the astral plane, the thought form must now function, and a body must be provided so as to make this possible. The energy of desire enters it, and he who meditates has to energize the form with one of two types of force before it passes into objectivity. Upon the action taken depends the construction of the etheric body and the consequent physical manifestation. This point is but little realized by the average thinker, but the parallel with his own life experience is exact, as is the correspondence with the cosmic process. The nature of the deva, as it is called, enters in, and upon the quality of its love nature and the specific type of that which is the object of love will depend the nature of the thought form. If the deva, or solar angel, is as yet in love with manifestation and has a desire for objective existence, thus identifying himself voluntarily with substance, there ensues the phenomenon of reincarnated physical life. If the deva, or solar angel, is no longer attracted by matter, then there is no identification, and objective life is no longer the law of his existence. He identifies himself then with quality or energy and becomes an expression of the divine attributes. Objectivity may then ensue as a voluntary offering to the good of the group or planetary existence, but identification with the separated form is no longer the case. The human vehicle then created is as much a thought form in this case as any other particularized idea, and the greatest act of conscious magic is to be seen. Page 1014. All other magical creations are subsidiary to this, through manipulation of negative and positive energy, thus bringing them to the point of equilibrium before informing them, the perfected body of the adept is formed. All magical work on the astral plane has to be along the line of equilibrizing activity, and the distinctive nature of this type of work on the three planes in the three worlds might be summed up as follows. On the mental plane, the positive force of the solar angel drives the substance needed into the correct form. On the astral plane, the equilibrizing force of the solar angel gathers the needed material and energy from all directions and builds it into the necessary astral sheath. On the physical plane, the negative force of the solar angel is all that is needed to gather the desired etheric substance. By this I mean the form has now achieved a vitality and distinction of its own, so that no aggressive action emanating from the egoic center is required to continue the work. The note and vibration of the form itself suffices. Rule 8. The Agni Suryans respond to the sound. The waters ebb and flow. Let the magician guard himself from drowning at the point where land and water meet. The midway spot, which is neither dry nor wet, must provide the standing place whereon his feet are set. When water, land, and air meet, there is the place for magic to be wrought. It will be noted that in this rule no mention is made of the fourth element, fire. The reason for this is that the magician has to accomplish the stupendous task of generating the needed fire at this triple meeting place. This is one of the most occult and most puzzling of the rules. Page 1015. Some light is thrown on it by the following three sentences from the old commentary. Quote, when the fire is drawn from the inmost point within the heart, the waters suffice not to subdue it. Like a stream of flame, it issues forth and traverses the waters, which disappear before it. Thus the goal is found. Close quote. Quote, when the fire descends from the one who watches above, the wind suffices not to blow it out. The very winds protect, shield, and aid the work, guiding the falling fire under the point of entrance. Close quote. Quote, when the fire emanates from the mouth of the one who thinks and sees, then the earth sufficeth not to hide or kill the flame. It feeds the flame, causing a growth and magnitude of fire which reaches to the narrow door of entrance. Close quote. Under this symbology, much is hidden anent the life-giving energy, the centers symbolized to focalize it and to drive it forth, and the place the various types of receptive matter play in the magical work. As is ever the case in all white magic, the activity of the solar angel is the primary factor, and the work of the man upon the physical plane is regarded as secondary. His physical body and the work engendered therein being frequently referred to as fuel and its warmth. This needs careful remembering and will give the clue to the necessity of egoic alignment and to the problem of the extinction of certain workers in magic who were destroyed by their own fire or energy. The discreet magician is one who sees to the readiness of his lowest vehicle to carry the fire wherewith he works, and this he accomplishes through discipline and strict purity. The magician guards himself from drowning or from coming under the influence of the water or astral elementals through a knowledge of certain formulas, and until these sounds and mantrams are imparted and known, it is not safe for the man on the physical plane to attempt magical creation. These formulas are three in number. Page 1016. First, those which blend the two notes, add a third, and thus call into activity the builders of the astral plane, the Agni Suryans, in some one or other of their grades. These are based on the initiatory sound of the ego and distinguish between it and the sound of the note of the builders and lives of the tiny thought form already formed. The formula is chanted on a basis of these three notes, variation of tone and note, though not of formula, producing the types of forms. Second, those which are of a purely protective nature and which, through a knowledge of the laws of sound as they are known in connection with water or the astral plane, place a vacuum between the magician and the waters as well as between him and his creation. This formula is based on the sounds connected with air as well, for it is through placing around himself a protecting shell of air atoms, esoterically understood, that the magician guards himself from the approach of the water builders. Third, those which, when sounded, produce two results, the sending forth of the perfected creation, so that it may take to itself a physical body, and next, the dispersal of the building forces, now that their work is completed. This last set of formulas is of exceeding interest, and were they not so powerful, the magician might find himself cumbered with the produce of his thought and the prey of a vital form and of certain devas of the waters who would never leave him until they had completely drained from him all the waters of his nature, absorbing it into their own nature and producing his astral death. The curious phenomenon would then be seen of the ego or solar angel being incarnated in the mental sheath, yet separated from the physical body, owing to the occult drowning of the magician. There is nothing left for the ego to do then but to snap the satratma or thread and sever all connection with the lowest sheath. Page 1017. This lowest sheath then may persist for a short time according to the strength of the animal life, but more probably death would immediately ensue. Several magicians have perished thus. Footnote. The courses open to the divine ego after separation are two. A. It can start a fresh series of incarnations. B. It can return to the bosom of the Father and be gathered back to the monad. Two courses are open to the lower discarded self. A. If with a physical body it becomes a soulless man, in this case there is hope. B. If without a physical body it becomes a spook or one form of the dweller on the threshold. From the Secret Doctrine, Volume 3. Return to text. Rule 9. Condensation next ensues. The fire and waters meet, the form swells and grows. Let the magician set his form upon the proper path. This rule is very briefly summed up in the injunction, let desire and mind be so pure and so equally apportioned and the created form so justly balanced that it cannot be attracted towards the destructive or left-hand path. End of side one, cassette number 24, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1017. Continued on side two. Side two, cassette number 24, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section two, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 1017. Rule 10. As the waters bathe the form created, they are absorbed and used. The form increases in its strength. Let the magician thus continue until the work suffices. Let the outer builders cease their labors then, and let the inner workers enter on their cycle. One of the fundamental concepts which is grasped by all magical workers is that both will and desire are force emanations. They differ in quality and vibration, but are essentially currents of energy, one forming an initial vortex or center of activity, being centrifugal, and the other being centripetal, and the main factor in the accretion of matter into a form around the central vortex. This can be seen demonstrating in an interesting way in the case of the egoic lotus, where we have the will aspect forming the jewel in the lotus, or the inner center of electrical energy, and the desire or love aspect forming the egoic lotus itself, or the form which hides the center. Page 1018. The analogy in all form building holds good for gods, men, and atoms. The solar system is, from the higher cosmic planes, seen as a vast blue lotus, and so on down the scale. Even the tiny atom of substance can be so considered. The distinction between these various lotuses exists in the number and arrangement of the petals. The solar system is literally a 12-petal lotus, each petal being formed of 49 lesser petals. The planetary lotuses differ in each scheme, and one of the secrets of initiation is revealed when the number of the petals of A, our Earth planet, B, our planetary polar opposite, C, our complementary or equilibrizing planet, is committed to the initiate. Armed with this knowledge, he can then work out certain formulas of magic which enable him to create in the three spheres. It is the same basic concept which governs thought form building and which enables a magician of white magic to produce objective phenomena on the physical plane. He works with the two types of energy, will and desire, and their equilibrizing is what leads to the balancing of the pairs of opposites and the subsequent release of energy substance in the formation of the physical plane structure. The magician has to know the following facts. The formulas for the two aspects of logoic energy, will and desire. This is literally apprehension of the note and formula of the Brahma or substance aspect, and the note and formula of the Vishnu or building aspect. One he ascertains because he has mastered matter, the other is revealed to him when he has achieved group consciousness. Page 1019. The formula for the particular type of energy substance which he is seeking to employ. This will have relation to that particular petal in the solar lotus from which the desired force emanates. The formula for the particular type of energy which is transmitted to him via one or other of the three circles of petals in his own egoic lotus. The formula for the particular petal in a circle of petals with which he may choose to work. All these concern primarily the will aspect, as far as the thought form to be produced is concerned, for the magician is the will or purpose or spirit behind the objective phenomenon which he is in process of producing. The formula which sweeps into activity and thus produces a form, those Agnisurians who are energized by any particular aspect of solar force. Where the two forces are brought into contact, the form is produced, or the third energy center appears or manifests, A, the energy of the will aspect, B, the energy of the desire or love aspect, C, the energy of the consequent thought form. There is no contradiction here to the occult teaching that father and mother, or spirit and matter, when brought into contact, produce the son. The difficulty which students have to surmount consists in the true interpretation of the three terms, mother, matter, moisture, or the waters. In creation, the three vibratory spheres, one, the dense physical, mother, matter, two, the etheric, matter, Holy Spirit, three, the astral, moisture, water, work as a unit, and in the occult teaching, during the earlier stages of creation, must not be separated or distinguished apart. On the path of involution, if the subject may be approached from a different angle, and thus somewhat clarified, distinctions are made, and on the path of evolution, or of return, they are, as we well know, surmounted. On the middle point of equilibrium, as on our globe, for instance, confusion ensues in the mind of the student owing to the occult fact that the various formulas are being employed simultaneously. The thought forms are at all stages of construction, and the ensuing chaos is terrible. Page 1020. The rule which we are commenting upon may be interpreted as stating that in the magical work, the energy of the waters becomes paramount and desire for the form and the fulfillment of its objective increases. This takes place after the will energy has formed the central nucleus by being brought into contact with the desire force. The magician, through desire or strong motive, increases the vitality of the form until it is so powerful and intense in its own separated life that it is ready to go forth on its mission upon the physical plane. The building devas who have been impelled to construct the form out of the myriads of elemental lives available have completed their work and now cease from constructing. This particular type of energy no longer drives the lesser lives in any specific direction, and the final cycle of work upon the astral plane is entered upon. This is summed up in the next rule. Rule 11. Three things the worker with the law must now accomplish. First, ascertain the formula which will confine the lives within the ensphering wall. Next, pronounce the words which will tell them what to do and where to carry that which has been made, and finally, to utter forth the mystic phrase which will save him from their work. The embodied idea has now form and shape upon the astral plane, but all is as yet in a state of flux, and the lives are only held in place through the fixed attention of the magician, working through the greater builders. Page 1021. He must, through knowledge of certain magical phrases, make the work more permanent and independent, and fix the place of the vitalizing elements within the form, and give them an impetus that will result in more settled concretion. Having accomplished that, he becomes, if it might so be expressed, an agent of karma, and sends forth the dual thought form, clothed in mental and astral matter, to fulfill its mission, whatever that may be. Finally, he has to take steps to protect himself from the attractive forces of his own nature, which might eventuate in his holding the thought form so closely within the radius of his own influence that it would be rendered useless, its own inherent energy neutralized and its purpose negated. They might also produce such a powerful attractive force that he would draw the form so closely to himself that he would be forced to absorb it. This can be harmlessly accomplished by the man who knows how, but results, nevertheless, in a waste of energy which is forbidden under the law of economy. With the majority of men, who are oft unconscious magicians, many thought forms are malicious or destructive, and react back upon their creators in a disastrous manner. See, four rules for the physical plane. In the magical work of form creation, we have carried the thought form down from the mental plane where the solar angel initiated the work, through the astral where the equilibrizing work was done, to the physical plane or to the etheric levels. Here the work of producing objectivity is carried forward, and here the worker in magic is in critical danger of failure should he not be cognizant of the forms and mantrams by which the new group of builders can be reached, and the gap between the astral plane and the gaseous subplane of the physical be bridged. It might be useful here to remember that in the work of creation, the white magician avails himself of the current ray influence. Page 1022. When the third, fifth, and seventh rays are in power, either coming in at full meridian or passing out, the work is much easier than when the second, sixth, or fourth are dominant. At the present time, the seventh ray, as we know, is rapidly dominating, and it is one of the easiest of the forces with which man has to work. Under this ray, it will be possible to build a new structure for the rapidly decaying civilization and to erect the new temple desired for the religious impulse. Under its influence, the work of the numerous unconscious magicians will be much facilitated. This will eventuate in the rapid growth of unconscious psychic phenomena, in the spread of mental science, and the consequent ability of thinkers to acquire and to create those tangible benefits they desire. Nevertheless, this magic of the unconscious or selfish kind leads to karmic results of a deplorable nature, for only those who work with the law and who control the lesser lives through knowledge, love, and will evade the consequences entailed on those who manipulate living matter for selfish ends. The white magician utilizes solar forces. As the planet passes around the sun, different types of solar energy are contacted, and expert knowledge is required to utilize the influences in due time, and to have the form so constituted that it can respond at the needed hour to the differentiated energy. He manipulates planetary force of a triple nature: A, that which is the product of his own planet and the most easily available; B, that which emanates from the polar opposite of our planet; C, that which can be felt originating from that planet which forms with our Earth and its opposite the esoteric triangle. Page 1023. Students need here to remember that we are now dealing with etheric matter and vital energy, and are therefore concerning ourselves with the physical plane and all that is included in that term. They need likewise to remember that the magician, as he is working on the plane of objectivity, is in a position to use his own vital forces in the work of thought form creation, but this is only possible and permissible when he has reached the point in evolution where he is a channel for force and knows how to draw it within himself, transmute it or combine it with the forces of his own body, and then transmit it to the thought form which he is in process of constructing. Much of interest will open up before the thinker who extends this idea to the planetary logos and his work of form creating. With these few preliminary remarks, we can now continue with the rules of magic for the physical plane. Rule 12. The web pulsates. It contracts and expands. Let the magician seize the midway point and thus release those prisoners of the planet whose note is right and justly tuned to that which must be made. It is necessary for the magician here to remember that all that takes place upon the earth is to be found within the planetary etheric web. The worker in white magic, being an occultist, deals in universals and starts his magical work on the confines of the physical etheric sphere. His problem is to locate those lesser lives within the web who are of the right order to be built into the proposed thought vehicle. Such work can necessarily only be done by the man who, through the severance of the confining web of his own etheric web, can reach out to that which is consciously recognized by him as the planetary vital body. Only he who is free can control and utilize those who are prisoners. This is an occult axiom of real moment, and much of the failure undergone by would-be workers in magic is to be traced to the fact that they themselves are not free. Page 1024. The prisoners of the planet are those myriads of deva lives who form the planetary pranic body and are swept in on the floods of vital force emanating from the physical sun. Rule 13. The magician must recognize the four. Note in his work the shade of violet which they evidence, and thus construct the shadow. When this is so, the shadow clothes itself, and the four become the seven. This means literally that the magician must be in a position to discriminate between the different ethers and to note the special hue of the different levels, thereby ensuring a balanced building of the shadow. He recognizes them in the occult sense, that is, he knows their note and key and is aware of the particular type of energy they embody. Enough emphasis has not been laid upon the fact that the three higher levels of the etheric planes are in vibratory communication with the three higher planes of the cosmic physical plane, and they, with their ensphering fourth level, have been called in the occult books the inverted tetractys. It is this knowledge which puts the magician in possession of the three types of planetary force and their combination, or the fourth type, and thus releases for him that vital energy which will drive this idea into objectivity. As the different types of forces meet and coalesce, a dim shadowy form clothes itself upon the vibrating astral and mental sheath, and the idea of the solar angel is attaining definite concretion. Rule 14. The sound swells out. The hour of danger to the soul courageous draweth near. The waters have not hurt the white creator, and naught could drown nor drench him. Danger from fire and flame menaces now, and dimly yet the rising smoke is seen. Let him again, after the cycle of peace, call on the solar angel. Page 1025. The work of creation assumes now serious proportions, and for the final time the body of the magician is menaced by destruction. The shadow having been formed, it is now ready to take to itself a fiery or gaseous body, and it is these fire builders who menace the life of the magician, and this for the following reasons. Firstly, because the fires of the human body are closely allied to the fires with which the magician seeks to work, and should these latent fires of the body and the latent fires of the planet be brought into too close juxtaposition, the creator is in danger of burning and destruction. Secondly, the Agni Shaitans, being allied to the fire devas of the mental plane, have much power and can only be controlled properly by the solar angel himself. Thirdly, on this planet, the planetary fires are not as yet dominated by solar fire and are very easily driven into the work of destruction. The solar angel must therefore now again be invoked. This means that the magician, when his shadow is completed and prior to the final stages of concretion, must see to it that his alignment with the ego is just and unimpeded, and the communicating currents in full play. He must literally renew his meditation and make direct contact afresh before proceeding with the work. Otherwise, the fires of his own body may get out of control, and his etheric body suffer in consequence. He, therefore, fights fire with fire and draws down solar fire for his protection. This was not necessary on the astral plane. For the magician, the moments of the greatest danger in the work of creating are at certain junctures on the astral plane, where he is in danger of occult drowning, and at the transition from etheric levels to the planes of tangible concretion, when he is menaced by occult burning. Page 1026. In the one case, he does not call on the ego, but stems the tide by love and the equilibrizing powers of his own nature. In the latter case, he must call in that which represents the will aspect in the three worlds, the impulsive dynamic thinker or solar angel. He accomplishes this by means of a mantram. No clue can be given to this owing to the powers it confers. Rule 15. The fires approach the shadow, yet burn it not. The fire sheath is completed. Let the magician chant the words that blend the fire and water. Little can here be said in interpretation of these words beyond a reference to the general sense. The gaseous sheath is created, and the hour for the formation of the sheath for the sixth subplane, the liquid, is near. The two must blend. This is the moment of the greatest danger as far as the thought form itself is concerned. Earlier dangers have menaced the magician. now the form he is creating must be protected. The nature of the danger is hinted at in the words, "Where fire and water meet apart from chanted sound, all dissipates in steam. The fire ceases to be." This danger is hid in the karmic enmity existing between the two great groups of devas. These groups can only be united by the mediator, man. It might be asked of what use the 15 rules for magic communicated above may be. Not, as yet, as far as practical work is concerned, but much where inner intellectual development is desired. He who meditates and broods over these rules in the light of what has been earlier communicated anent the devas and building forces will arrive at an understanding of the laws of construction in the macrocosm, which will avail him much and save him much time when the magical work and formulas are put in his hands. Page 1027. Section 2, Division E, Motion on the Plane of Mind. Roman numeral 1, Introductory Remarks. Roman numeral 2, The Nature of This Motion. 1, Spiral Cyclic. 2, Triple. 3, Attractive. Roman numeral 3, Results of Its Activity. 1, The Law of Expansion. 2, The Law of Monadic Return. 3, The Law of Solar Evolution. 4, The Law of Radiation. A, The Cause of Radiation. B, Radiation in the Five Kingdoms. C, Radiation and Cyclic Law. Roman numeral 4, The Turning of the Wheel. 1, The Solar Wheel. 2, The Planetary Wheel. 3, The Human Wheel. Roman numeral 5, Motion and the Form Building Aspect. 1, In the Mental Sheath. 2, In the Causal Body. Roman numeral 6, Effects of Synthetic Motion. 1, Introductory Remarks. 2, It Produces Periodic Manifestation. 3, Causes Triangular Linking. 4, Produces a Relation Between Three Centers. Roman numeral 1, Introductory Remarks. We have now concluded our consideration of thought forms, having viewed the whole universe, including man, as an embodied thought, and having dealt with the ability of man himself to create forms for the clothing of his ideas. Page 1028. We now return once more to the realm of technicalities and to the more scientific part of our thesis. I use the word scientific, for that which will be said concerns that which is proven and known to occultists and deals with facts. The modern fact of the modern scientist is his approximation of a part, and often an infinitesimal part, of some greater whole, and even then it concerns only the most objective part of manifestation, for that which is the essence is not regarded as a reality at all by them, as it is by the real occult knower. That which we see and can touch is but an effect of inner underlying causes. The occultist does not concern himself with effects, but only with their originating cause. The modern scientist, therefore, is not as yet occupying himself with causes, and during the past only approached the realm of these initiatory impulses when he began to comprehend the energy aspect of matter and to consider the nature of the atom. When he can pass more directly in his thoughts to the discussion and consideration of the etheric substratum which underlies the tangible, then and only then will he be entering the domain of causes, and even in this case only those physical causes which underlie the grossly objective. He will not really have ascertained the vital impulses which produce being. Yet a great step will have been made, for, under the law of analogy, he will then be in a position to comprehend some of the major secrets of solar manifestation. For the planes of our solar system constitute, as we know, and as this treatise seeks to demonstrate, the 7 subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. It is apparent to all careful students of this treatise on fire that in this section we are concerned with, first, that mode of activity which distinguishes the Vishnu aspect of deity, or the motion of the divine Manasaputras, page 1029. This involves, therefore, a consideration of the effects of this motion,
A. Within the planetary schemes, their bodies. B. Upon the atoms or points in those bodies, the human and deva monads. Second, that impulse which is the basis of the law of periodicity and which results in the cyclic incarnation of all beings. This impulse manifests in three cycles or in three turns of the wheel of being. A. The activity which produces involution or the submergence in matter of life or spirit. B. The activity which produces the equilibrium of these two forces, matter and spirit, or manifestation or the processes of evolution. C. The activity which withdraws the central energy from out of the responsive form and produces obscuration. Third, that activity which causes the interplay, attraction and consequent repulsion, between all atoms, from the great cosmic atom, a solar system, to the tiny atom of the chemist or the physicist. This activity, therefore, may be viewed as A. intercosmic or affecting constellations, B. interplanetary or affecting the schemes, C. interchain or affecting the chains, D. interglobular or producing an interchange of force between the globes of the chains, E. intersectional or affecting the transference of force between the five kingdoms of nature, F. interhuman or relating to the interplay between the various human units, G. interatomic or the passage of force from one atom to another atom. Students need here to remember that we are concerned with the energy or activity which produces forms, and therefore with the forces which tend to coherence, to concretion, and to the stabilization of the work of the builders. Page 1030. If they but realized it, the key to much that is connected with the production of forms, or of the sun, the second aspect, is contained in the above tabulation, for all nature holds together, and the life of any scheme, globe, kingdom, or atom becomes in turn the animating principle of another scheme, globe, kingdom, or atom. Everything in the solar system is in a state of flux, as is everything in the universe, and the vital energy circulates, as the blood or the nervous energy of the body circulates, throughout the entire system. This is the basis of the occult fact that all in nature, for instance, will be, is, or has been through the human kingdom. Under this type of solar activity, the ultimate good is attained by the method of interplay, interchange, and in mutual attraction and repulsion. It would be advisable here if students would study that which was communicated in the early part of this treatise upon motion upon the physical and astral planes. Under the law of analogy, much will be noted as necessarily translated onto the higher plane, and to be transmuted into the energy of the form-building impulse. We will consider what we have to say in this section under the following heads. 1. The nature of this motion, spiral cycling. 2. The results of its activity. These results can be viewed as four subsidiary laws or adjuncts to the major law of attraction, and may be called the law of expansion, the law of monadic return, the law of solar evolution, the law of radiation. Page 1031. It will therefore be apparent that as we consider these laws, we are dealing with matters that concern the process of initiation, the life of the divine pilgrims upon the upward arc, the impulse which produces the sun and which drives him to gain experience through the medium of the solar system, magnetism or divine alchemy. 3. The turning of the wheel. A. The solar wheel. B. The planetary wheel. C. The human wheel. This will involve our taking up the consideration of the orbital paths of these various spheres, their centers, interplay and intercommunication, and of force transference, and will bring out the concept that all spiral cyclic activity is not the result of the rotary action of matter itself, but of an impulse emanating from without any particular atom, and therefore extraneous to it. 4. Motion or the form-building impulse latent in A. the mental sheath itself, both cosmically and humanly considered. B, the causal body of the macrocosm and the microcosm. C, the centers, divine and human. 5. The effects of the united activity of the sheath, the centers, and the causal body as it produces A, periodic manifestation, B, the linking of the triangles, C, the relation between the throat center, the alter major center, and the mental center, macrocosmically and microcosmically considered. Page 1032. Roman numeral 2, the nature of this motion. As we well know, the nature of the motion on the plane of matter is rotary. Each atom of matter rotates on its own axis, and each larger atom, from the purely physical standpoint, likewise does the same. A cosmic atom, a solar system, a planetary atom, and a human atom, man, can be seen equally rotating at differing degrees of velocity upon their own axis or around their own pole. When we arrive at the plane of mind and have to consider the activity of the second aspect of divinity, that which builds and holds the forms in coherent form, and which is the basis of the phenomenon we call time, literally the awareness of the form, a different type of force or motion becomes apparent. This type of energy in no way negates or renders useless the atomic rotary type, but involves it, and yet at the same time it brings the atoms of all degrees under the influence of its own activity, so that in every form, which is in manifestation, the two types are manifested. I would here remind the student that we are primarily considering the force of the second aspect as it concerns the human and superhuman kingdoms, or as the Manasaputras and their various groups are concerned. On the involutionary arc, the Vishnu force is likewise felt, but until the nature of the group soul is more apprehended and the quality of the life who informs each of the subhuman kingdoms of nature is known with greater accuracy, it will profit us more to deal with force as it affects the human being, the planet on which he may be found, and the system in which that planet is playing its part. The activity of the second aspect has been called spiral cyclic, which in itself involves the concept of duality. This activity is the cause of all cyclic evolution and has been called in the occult phraseology the activity of Brahma's year. It is that which brings about the periodical appearing and disappearing of all existences, great or small. Page 1033. It is intimately linked with the will aspect of divinity and with the Lipika lords of the highest degree, and its origin is therefore difficult for us to comprehend. Perhaps all that can be said about it is that it is largely due to certain impulses which, as far as our solar system is concerned, can be traced to the sun Sirius. These impulses find their analogy in the impulses emanating in cyclic fashion from the causal body of man, which impulses bring about his appearance upon the plane of Maya for a temporary period. A hint may here be given to the earnest student. In the threefold ego, the lives who form the central bud, the lives of the petals, and the triple group of lives who form the three permanent atoms, is seen a correspondence to the three groups of Lipika lords who are the karmic cause of solar manifestation and who control its periodic manifestation. These three groups are related to their guiding intelligences on Sirius. The law of periodicity is the effect produced by the amalgamation of these two types of force with a third. The two types of force or energy are the activity of the first aspect, the logoic will or purpose, and the energy of the second aspect. This purpose is hidden in foreknowledge of the logos and is completely hidden even from the adept of the fifth initiation. The adept has achieved a comprehension of the purpose of the Son, and for him there remains the problem to recognize the purpose of the Father. The one is the impulse behind the forward movement of all life, and the other the impulse behind its cyclic activity, and this is called spiral cyclic. When this blended dual force is brought in touch with the rotary activity of matter itself, we have the triple activity of the ego, for instance, which is rotary, spiral, cyclic. and that which results in the stimulation of the self-contained atom in the periodical emergence of form and in the steady though slow progress towards a goal. Page 1034. We might, for the sake of clarity, differentiate the effects thus. 1. Rotary activity. The internal activity of every atom viewed as a unity, the activity of Brahma or the Holy Spirit, perfected in the first solar system. It is unified individual consciousness. I am. 2. Cyclic activity. The activity of all forms, viewing them from the aspect of consciousness and of time. It is unified group consciousness. I am that. The activity of Vishnu in process of being perfected in this, the second solar system. 3. Spiral activity. The influence which impresses all forms, which emanates from their greater center, and which merges itself a little, a very little, with the two other modes of motion, being practically lost sight of in the stronger vibration. It is the activity which will be perfected in the third solar system, and is the Shiva form of motion and the unified consciousness of all groups. It is the consciousness which proclaims, I am that I am. One of the primary things the occult student should remember when considering the nature of spiral cyclic activity is that it has two effects. First, it is an attractive force gathering the rotating atoms of matter into definite types and forms and holding them there as long as necessity demands. Secondly, it is itself gradually dominated by another and higher vibration, and through its spiraling progress through matter, it sweeps those forms systematically nearer and nearer to another and stronger point of energy. These effects are to be seen clearly demonstrated in man's evolution in the approach he makes uniformly through the cycles to the center of the spiral cyclic energy, and subsequently to the still more impressive point, that of his Father in Heaven. Page 1035. The angel first attracts animal man. Cyclically he actuates the material sheaths, thus giving them coherence, and ever swings them into closer relation to himself. Later, as the momentum is increased, the man is swung more definitely into relation with the monadic aspect, until that higher rhythm is imposed upon him. This is equally true of a planetary locus and of a solar locus. The spiral cyclic force demonstrates, as might be expected, in seven ways. Of these, the three major methods of demonstration are symbolized in the rod of initiation of Sanat Kumara. The rod, most frequently recognized by men, is that of the Hierophant, the Bodhisattva, which consists of the straight central serpent with the two others entwined around it, thus picturing, among other things, A, the three outpourings, B, the three worlds, C, the spinal column and its channels, or those main factors with which the initiate concerns himself. He has to understand somewhat the nature of matter and what is occultly involved in that expression, his own triple constitution, the three worlds in which he has to play his part, and the instrument which he has to use. This rod of the Bodhisattva is surmounted by a diamond which is not as great a diamond as the flaming diamond of the first Kumara, but is of rare beauty. At the time of initiation, when the electrical forces are tapped, this diamond revolves on its axis, picturing the rotary nature of atomic matter. The rod of Sanat Kumara is far more intricate, and instead of the central rod, or serpent, standing on the tip of its tail, all the three serpents are interwoven in a spiral fashion, and the flaming diamond which surmounts it is of such radiance that the effect is produced of a spheroidal aura cast around the interlaced serpents, typifying the form-building nature of the Vishnu activity. Page 1036. According to the initiation taken, a reflection will be seen from a part of the interlaced serpents, and the illusion will be created that the diamond is cycling up and down between the summit and the irradiated portion. At the same time, each serpent revolves upon itself, and likewise cycles around its neighbor, producing an effect of extraordinary brilliance and beauty, and typifying rotary, spiral, cyclic force. The seven types of spiral cyclic energy are suggestive of the nature of the planetary logoi which they represent, and produce therefore the distinctions which exist between men. They are accountable for the nature of cycles, and this is a point oft overlooked. Students discuss the periods of the emergence of the rays, setting arbitrary dates such as 2,500 years for the manifestation of any particular ray. One ray does pass through its cycle in that length of time, but only one, the others being either longer or shorter. The difference has a great effect upon the egoic cycles and is responsible for the length of time between incarnations. Some egos cycle through their incarnations and their pralayas very rapidly. Others spend untold eons, and hence it is impossible to say that there are even averages connected with the appearance of egos on the astral plane, for instance. This fact has bearing upon the statement of HPB anent the large effort each 100 years. Under the particular type of cyclic force emanating from the lodge, the high water mark of its activity is to be found once in every seven cycles. All that originates on that ray is controlled by spiral cyclic efforts based upon the number 10 and its multiples, and finding its highest cyclic vibration, as it happens, during the last quarter of each century. Page 1037. What our more modern students are apt to forget in this connection is that this activity is but the demonstration of one type of force out of seven possible, and that it concerns primarily that group of adepts who are on that particular line of energy, and will necessarily affect greatly all disciples and people on a similar line. At the same time, the work it initiates is endorsed by the lodge as a whole, for it is part of the force emanation of the planetary logos. It is naturally of great importance owing to the fact that this ray energy is that of one of the three major rays, but it will be, in the equilibrizing process, balanced by analogous cyclic emanatory activity from the two other major rays. It might be added here that when this is recognized, it will become apparent that the revolutionizing scientific discoveries, which can be traced down the centuries, such as the formulation of the law of gravitation, the circulation of the blood, the ascertainment of the nature of steam, the discovery by man of that form of electrical phenomena which he has harnessed, and the more recent discovery of radium, are, in their own department, that of the Mahachohan, analogous to the effort made during the last quarter of each century to stimulate the evolution of men through a further revelation of some part of the secret doctrine. Newton, Copernicus, Galileo, Harvey, and the Curies are, on their own line of force, light-bringers of equal rank with HPB. All revolutionized the thought of their time. All gave a great impulse to the ability of man to interpret the laws of nature and to understand the cosmic process, and only those of circumscribed vision will fail to recognize the unity of the many force impulses emanating from the one lodge. These cycles will not coincide, for they are not all similar to the 100-year spiral. Some idea as to the Mahachohan cycle of emanatory impulses may be gathered by considering the dates of the foremost scientific discoveries since Plato's time. The cycles of the second ray may also be averaged by a summary of the appearances of the great teachers down the ages. Page 1038. The force emanations from the Manu, or those of the first ray, are easily traced when the races are considered, and this has been done in the recognition of the races and sub-races. What is oft overlooked is that each of these rays of energy demonstrates constructively through the form-building agencies and destructively through the ability of the force to destroy prior to building. Thus the cycles can be viewed from two angles. It is at this point that students in one branch of our theosophical movement must recognize the fact that just as HPB came forth on a cyclic tide of energy to destroy the limiting forms to be found in the world of science and religion, so his work must fit in with other force emanations, such as the constructive work of the second ray in conjunction with the energy of the seventh at this time. When students learn to blend the 100-year cycles of the first type of energy with the equally powerful impulses from the second ray and the third, we shall then have a cessation of many controversies. No great impulse will come from the lodge along the line of the first ray of will or power till the close of a century. One such impulse along another line of force came when the discovery of the nature of the atom was arrived at through the study of electricity and of radioactive substances, and an impulse from the second aspect is imminent. It is not safe for students with limited vision to dogmatize anent this question of cycles. Apart from the cyclic impulses continuously going forth, overlapping and superseding and intermingling with each other, there are many which we might call lesser impulses, and the cycle of 100 years to which HPV refers is but one of the lesser impulses. There is a 1,000-year cycle of greater moment. Page 1039. There are vaster cycles of 2,500 years, of 7,000 years, of 9,000 years, of 15,000 years, and many others which only advanced initiates know of or can follow. These can break in upon any of the lesser impulses and can be seen appearing unexpectedly as far as average man's knowledge is concerned, and yet they are but the returning impulses set in cyclic motion perhaps thousands of years ago. HPB is right in his affirmation as far as the impulse of the first ray is concerned, but his followers are not right in so far as they overlook and negate the six other types of impulses of equal or of more importance which may emanate cyclically from the lodge and which will meet with response from those who vibrate to that particular type of energy. End of side 2, cassette number 24, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 1039. Continued on cassette number 25.